When did universities become a place where you can be tracked down and, you know, held accountable for what you think and what you say? It used to be that universities were a place where everything was on the table. You know, thoughts you agreed with, ones you did not. And it wasn't about threatening people. It was about winning an argument. If you could present a better argument than the next guy or the next lady there, then you would win the conversation. You would, you know, vigorously defend your point of view, and maybe you would keep yours, or maybe it would change your mind and vice versa. But now, my gosh, if you don't toe the company line, just like we saw all those folks in California over the weekend that were Democrats and they say something that doesn't agree with the agenda of the Democrat Party, they get booed right off the stage. If you're not pulling the ideology straight from the talking points, man, you're out. And sadly, that's happened to our universities, as far as I'm concerned, because there is so much going on out there. And now in places like the University of Illinois, for example, they have this thing called the Bias Response Team. Call the Bias Response Team. Call 911. There's been bias reported in hall number 3. I mean, come on. Joining me now, Nicole Neely, the Speech First President, somebody who's been on this program many, many times. Nicole, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
I mean, really, the Bias Response Team, what are they? They pull out a flag and throw it on the campus floor. Flag on the play. There's been response to bias. I mean, come on. Isn't a university supposed to be a place where you have a big discussion about big ideas or small ideas, ideas in general? What's going on?
It's supposed to be. It's actually the Bias Assessment Response Team. So they call it BART, which makes it sound really benign, but it's not. It's super creepy, like you said. So students are able to anonymously report each other. There's an online portal and they're encouraged to do so. The university police posts about it on Twitter and Facebook. There was even the head of it, who was in the office of the dean of students, was seen trolling on Facebook, asking people to make reports on things.
So let me get this straight. They keep you were supposed to anonymously turn in your neighbor. Is that what you're telling
me?
That, you know, that sounds, that sounds reminiscent of, say, 1933, Germany. Turn in your neighbor. What are they doing wrong? Have somebody stop by and get them straightened out immediately. That's really what it sounds like.
It is, yeah. And you can speculate on the person's motives. You know, you don't have to confirm anything. And it can be on campus, off campus, online. We listened to a podcast where the co-chair of it actually said, you could be on spring break in Alabama, and if you break a window, that would fall under their jurisdiction. So it's more power than, frankly, police departments give themselves, which is something that's really scary.
How on earth would they think that they have the jurisdiction over the way you put a good setup, by the way? They're on spring break, so it's school is out of session. They're out of the state. They're not doing anything associated with classes in any way. And they're going to hold you accountable in what way? Because you post something that they don't like on Facebook, or you did something where, like you said, broke a window. Why is that any concern of the University of Illinois?
I'm not sure. Maybe they think that you're a representative of the school at that point. But, we'd love to find that out.
Well, that's frightening. I mean, the overreach is breathtaking. Because these universities believe they can dictate to you where you can have a conversation. They have these free speech zones, right, where you're allowed to say what you want, but only in this area that's cordoned off, which is nonsense to begin with. Of course, you can say anything that's liberal orthodoxy, right?
Of course. And so students obviously are in the position where they're worried they can get in trouble for saying basically anything. You can look at, they have a very detailed annual report of the different incidents of hate that have been reported and investigated on campus. Last year, there were 128. So there's a lot of political speech in there. There's religious speech in there. And so if you can get in trouble and dragged in to talk to university administrators for expressing constitutionally protected speech, if you know people who have done so, or you know that people in the past have, out of an abundance of caution, most students on that campus simply won't, because they're scared. Even if you know that you might be exonerated, it's a huge hassle. It's punishment by process. And it overlooks the power dynamic between a university and a student. Even if they say, hey, it's voluntary. How voluntary do you feel when you get an email from the dean of students saying, a report's been made against you, please come in? Not very voluntary.
Yeah, that's not voluntary. And if you don't come in, they sanction you? They throw you out of school because you said something on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram that doesn't fit with it? With their theology of liberalism. So you took the step, did your organization Speech First, to file suit against the University of Illinois. Tell me about that.
We did. We sued them on Thursday, and it's actually my alma mater, so hopefully they'll stop asking me for money now.
I suspect they will. Yeah, I don't think they're going to be too happy with you. Not at all. But tell me about the lawsuit, hope to accomplish.
We want to defend our students' rights, but we're asking for an injunction. We want these programs to be shut down. It's not only the bias response team. And by the way, there's two bias response teams. There's one for the university at large, and then there's also one specifically for the dorms. So there's two of those. The school has something called a no-contact directive, which is the equivalent of an on-campus restraining order. And that those have been issued on the basis of speech alone, which you also find problematic.
What do you mean? Hold on. What do you mean by that? Explain that, what you just said.
Sure. So if you say something that I have a problem with, I can go to the school discipline office and I can ask them to issue a no contact order against you, a restraining order. And so if you were to show up and be in the place where I am, I could report you for violating the no contact order. And if for that violation, you could be sanctioned up to and including expulsion.
Because I triggered you in some way. In some way, you were a victim. You know, it must be difficult, Nicole. What? It's got to be difficult to get up every day looking to be a victim. It's got to be hard because you're looking, I'm a victim here and I'm a victim here. Here a victim, there a victim, everywhere a victim. It's got to be difficult, don't you think?
I mean, it's one thing for that to be done, you know, if an assault had taken place, but to issue it because somebody said something or exercising protected speech is something that is completely unacceptable.
it's bizarre to me.
And then the fourth program that we challenged was that the university says that you need prior approval from the school to pass out political flyers related to non-campus election. So mayor, president, congressman, local elected official. You have to have the school approve your flyers. And that is, that's the most flagrant violation of the First Amendment that we've seen to date, because that's exactly what the Founding Fathers fought a war over.
They get to approve political speech. They get to approve your political speech. Your political speech, not approved. Via Vez, you're not approved. You approve. You know. I mean, come on. I'll give you the last word.
No. And so we sued them on Thursday. So we're looking to the courts for relief because our students are self-censoring themselves. They're scared because they don't know, they don't want the school adjudicating their speech. And frankly, it's not the school's right to do so anyway. And so we're looking to the federal courts and we're looking for a good fight.
Well, I applaud you for doing it. It's the right thing. And we need more of this, not less, because this nonsense against the freedom of speech and the freedom of expression and the nerve of the school to think they can dictate to you what political candidate flyers you're giving out. I mean, come on. It's beyond the pale. If you want to know more about you, Nicole Neely, and the Speech First program and your group, where do they go?
Speechfirst.org. Become a member. Membership is only $5. But they can also keep track of all our different lawsuits, because we also have an ongoing one against the University of Michigan and the University of Texas, too.
You guys are busy. I like it. Nicole Neely, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
There you have it. Back after this on the Steve Gruber Show.
Wyckoff Wellness welcomes back Dr. Chi for individual fingernail and tongue analysis June 10th through 15th. Fingernail and tongue changes may indicate problems with digestion, heart disease, blood sugar problems, and more. Call Wyckoff Wellness at 517-333-7270 to schedule your individual evaluation with Dr. Chi for only $40. Appointments are limited. Wyckoff Wellness in East Lansing is also hosting a free seminar with Dr. Chi Tuesday, June 11th at 6 p.m. Call 517-333-7270 to schedule today or go to wyckoffwellness.com.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over, until one day I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Every week at Ellie's Place, peer support groups help hundreds of children and teens learn to cope and begin to heal after the death of a parent, sibling, or someone close to them.
It just made me feel like I wasn't the only one going through this.
1 in 12 children in Michigan will experience the death of a parent or sibling before the age of 18. At Ellie's Place, children interact with peers who've suffered a similar loss and express their emotions in a secure and empowering environment. Learn more at elliesplace.org.